Hi, and welcome to installment number 7 of The Art of Relating. I'm your host, Zach Schwartz. I'm a psychologist. Again, no therapy or counseling over the radio, but learning a system together for effective humanistic intervention. Remember, please write in with questions or comments to Zach at kepw.org, and I'll be glad to answer those and share some of those with you on the next show. Today, we're going to talk about assertion and consideration as the elements of a healthy relationship and what it takes to get proficient at each of those things. But first, I want to remind you that integration is the key to getting these concepts and skills into your everyday behavior in all your relationships at work and home. So we've been through grounding together, and you should be grounding many times a day because ground comes first. Noticing the vulnerability behind anger, because vulnerability triggers nurturing, whereas anger triggers defensiveness, and there's always vulnerability behind anger. Finding your internal resources, if you can, the light that you're made of, what I would call your soul, and using that resource to create empathy and understanding and wisdom and strength as added to your grounding and centering. Remembering your working assumptions. Each person's a hero in their own movie, in their own reality, and that the most common fight are who's right fights, which are stopped pretty much altogether if you learn to speak and listen in the subjective tense. So I don't know what happened, just what I experienced. I don't know what John said, for example, but only what I heard. And as I do that, I can greatly decrease, if not eliminate, who's right fights from my communications. And remember that you have the right, one of your 5 rights, to perception, respect. So the reality you experience should count no more and no less than anyone else's in a relationship of equals. So, to begin, how do you define a healthy relationship? I have stipulated one definition of that I'd like to share, and that is that a healthy relationship exists between two or more independent parties. They each choose to be there, they don't have to be, and who act toward each other with mutual respect because each demands that respect, and that's called assertiveness, and each offers that respect. That's called consideration. Note that these two things, assertion and consideration, are related to each other. That is to say that the more effective I am at asserting myself, the more consideration I tend to get from the people I'm interacting with. And the more considerate I am, the more they tend to feel respected. And so assertion and consideration work together in a kind of balance. If someone is all the way assertive, they have strong assertion skills, but zero consideration skills, that's what we psychologists might call narcissistic. There's only one reality, and it's mine. You are just a character in my movie. Your movie doesn't exist to me. The opposite of that, someone who is all the way considerate but has no assertive skills at all, we call codependent. That is to say, so they get along actually quite well. Often codependents and narcissistics fall in love, quote unquote, because they agree. There's only one world and it's yours. There's only one world and it's mine. It's only when one of them starts to get healthier to develop a sense of both assertion and consideration that getting along together becomes much more difficult. Very often, the pattern I see is that the codependent person starts to learn their self-worth and to be more assertive, and the narcissistic person has trouble accepting that because they have trouble seeing the other person's reality at all, let alone the value of it. Anyway, for most people, they can learn to have a decent skill and a decent amount of each of those things, assertion and consideration. And we're going to talk today about some of the elements of assertion and consideration and how to practice them and use them. Now, it's hard for me to talk about assertiveness without talking some about personal power, so let me digress and do that just a bit. I had a female client once, many years ago, and she said, I took this class in assertiveness training, learned how to direct my voice and how to stay grounded and how to have intention, all things that are worth having. But I tell my husband these things assertively and he's not listening and I don't know what I'm doing wrong. So I said to her, there was a coffee table between us and there was a bunch of magazines on the coffee table. And I picked up one of the magazines and I said, tell me as assertively as you can that I can't throw these magazines at you. And she got grounded and good bass and good voice, and she pointed a finger at me and she said, you can't throw those magazines at me. So I threw the magazine at her gently. It knocked off her collarbone and fell into her lap, and she stood there staring at me, sat there, and I threw another one. Same thing, and another one, same thing. So pretty soon there was this pile of magazines building up in her lap, and we were both laughing, and I said, it's not working. What went wrong with that? So we had a discussion about personal power and what power she had in any relationship, even the relationship with me. And I said, look, put aside all the skills you learned in the assertiveness class. They're good skills, and you can still use them later, but don't worry about that right now. I'm going to throw this magazine at you without raising your voice, without running away, without being violent. Stop me from doing this. And she looked at me and said, when that magazine touches me, I'm walking out of your office and I'm not going to be your client anymore. And after a short hesitation, I said, only joking. And I put the magazine down and didn't throw it at her. Why did that work? I said, well, that worked. Why did that work? For basically two reasons. And this is the source, I think, of your power in a relationship of equals. The first piece of that power is her material and emotional independence from me. So for her to realize, for example, that there are other quality therapists affordable in town that she could choose from. She doesn't have to see me. Her security doesn't depend on me, and her material support doesn't depend on me. She has independence, so she can walk out and not deal with me again if she doesn't choose to. The other thing that gives her power is her assumed worth to me. That is to say, I didn't want her to leave unsatisfied. So I'm working with her, and I don't want to be fired, so to speak. You're allowed to fire your therapist or your doctor or whoever you're getting services from. And because she could leave, and because I didn't want her to, she had the power to set a limit with me, to say, you can't throw that magazine at me. Effective because of those two things. And I listened and respected that limit because of those two things. One more quick story. I met with a woman many years ago whose spouse was being verbally and sometimes even physically abusive with her, and all the advice she was getting was not to put up with that and to stop him from doing that. And the first thing I asked her was, are you confident that you could make a living, provide for your own food and shelter without this guy? To which she said, I've been a housewife for 35 years, and I have no idea how I'd support myself without him. And that alone, the material dependence, traps her and leaves her in a place where it's hard to negotiate, hard to set limits, and hard to protect herself. So no matter what arrangement you may make, say with a spouse or a partner, you have to have at least the feeling and knowledge that you could be materially independent if you wanted to. And she and I started to work on that as an initial goal, because she couldn't directly, easily, without great cost to herself, stop him until she felt that independence. Again, she didn't have to go out and get a job to have that independence. She just had to think through how she would get her feet on the ground and how she would support herself and what her rights were within the marriage and etc. Lots of factors go into her giving herself a confidence about her independence. And then she has one piece of what she needs to have the power to set a limit with that guy, which she could. And if he values her and respects her and wants her, then he will meet that limit, or he faces losing her. Again, it's her ability to walk away and her assumed value to him. He's not doing her a favor to her to keep her around. He wants her there. If he doesn't value her, if he doesn't love her, if he doesn't want her there, then why would she want to stay? Is it a question worth pondering if you have the independence to walk away? Now, people often ask me to clarify, what's the difference between assertive and aggressive? Well, simply put, aggressive is when you come into someone else's space, push them, tell them what to do, make a demand of their behavior. And assertive is more being strong about setting boundaries that protect you or give you what you need. And so when you are assertive, if I'm trying to get out of a room and I say, I need to go now, that may be me asserting myself. If I say, you need to move now, that crosses the line into aggression, and aggression tends to pull a defensive response. So assertive, not aggressive. I don't have to be aggressive. I don't even have to be angry to assert myself. I just have to be aware of my rights and have the personal power to speak of what I need and what I feel, and demand respect for that in our interactions. Now, often when I assert myself in a partnership or relationship, I am protecting myself against what I experience as violations of my interpersonal rights. And I have defined five of those, which I think are fairly universal. One is the right to safety, which means I have the right not to be abused verbally, physically, economically, politically, etc. And whether I'm being abused or not is a question I can only ask myself. If I feel abused, I have the right to assert myself. And every right carries an obligation. The obligation of the right to safety is to not be abusive to anyone else, or to make adjustment if they feel abused, so I don't have to argue about whether they're being abused or not, which is one of the who's right fights that I want to avoid. But I am willing to adjust our interaction or my actions in such a way to eliminate your feeling or resolve your feeling of being abused. That's the right to safety. The right to space is number two. And the right to space says you have the right to pause an interaction whenever you wish outside life and death emergencies, and have some time to ground yourself, to not interact, to clarify your thoughts, to plan what you want to share when you get back. And again, a lot of successful relating depends on having the free will to plan a response and not just react impulsively to what's being said or done to you. One of the first issues in process that I get into with couples is having or developing, unless they already have it, a pause button, a way to stop the dance, stop the process, stop the conversation. It's like going to neutral corners. It doesn't mean the conversation's over. I can't just avoid dealing with the other person indefinitely if they're a concerned partner or business or home, but I get to pause you know, like going to neutral corners in a combat, like, or a boxing match. You know, gloves are still on. I'll be right back. I'm just going to use the towel and get some water. But don't follow me over there and keep hitting me. I call time. Well, your right to call time is your right to space, to step back and consider. And the obligations that go with that right are the obligation to, A, return and resolve. You can't just take space and say, we're not talking about this anymore. More on that in a second, because that violates another right. And you have the obligation to respect someone else's ability and right to call time or take space or go to a neutral corner. If you're not able to stop the dance, stop the process, it's really hard to continue without escalating, to stay clear about what you're trying to say, to remember the concepts and skills you're trying to apply to a healthy relationship. The third right is the right to self-care. You have a right to spend some of your energy on yourself, and you're worth it. And in fact, I think the love you have for yourself and the care you show yourself is your source of truly giving and loving energy that you may share with anyone else. So taking care of someone else includes and is precluded by taking care of yourself. So when I train, say, workers at the Oregon Country Fair, I'll say, when you get to the site, try and get there early enough to set your camp, meet your neighbors, take care of your family, be wearing what you like, make sure you had food, make sure you had rest, because it's only under those conditions that you can do your best work on the job interacting with others. So, and we will always support self-care. So if one of my workers needs to do something for themselves, whether it be medicinal or refreshment or rest or food, of course, within reason, I want to help them have that and achieve that and support their getting it. Good self-care. You have the right to self-care. And you have the obligation to support other people's self-care. Someone else says, I need something for me right now, outside of this agenda even, then you're going to do everything you can to help them get that and support them in getting what they need for themselves. That's the right to self-care. The fourth right is the right to perception, respect. And the right to perception, respect, we talked about last week with subjectivity, is that your reality shouldn't count more or less than anyone else's. It's not less real, it's not less important, it's not less respect-worthy, it's the same. And you have the right to have that perception respected, validated, empathized with, listened to. Not necessarily agreed with. The other person doesn't have to have the same reality as yours, even one that is harmonic with it. But they do have the obligation to hear yours, to care about yours. We'll get into that more in a minute when I talk about consideration. The fifth right is your right to an issue. That means, again, in a relationship of equals, the right to an issue says you have the right to raise an issue and have it listened to and negotiated with and dealt with by your partner or partners. And you have the obligation to listen to and negotiate with your partner's issues. Every right, again, carries an obligation. And a no issue is settled or resolved in a relationship of equals until both parties think it is. So if my partner, who is my equal, says, I don't feel done with this yet, even if I think we resolved it, I have to ask her, so what part is unresolved for you? Maybe this is my understanding of where we are so far. Please share your perceptions, and whatever part is unresolved, we will continue to negotiate. Really, no other position will make sense in being considerate of an equal partner. Now, not all relationships are horizontal all the time. Many relationships in limited ways are vertical and need to be accounted for in that manner. So if, for example, you own a lemonade stand and you hire me as a worker to work in that lemonade stand, you may have power that in a limited way you can use with me that negates to some degree some of my rights, like the right to an issue or the right to perception respect, because you're paying me by the hour to run a lemonade stand that you own. So your perception in that instance is going to have more weight than mine. That's what you're paying me for. That notice doesn't give you the right to, say, be abusive with me, physically or verbally or sexually or whatever. But it does give you the right to tell me how, say, clean you want the counter in the lemonade stand. So one of my sons was working in a sandwich shop, and he had a lot of training in food law and food service and cookery. And he took the job temporarily to help him pay his rent while he was going to school. And he called me up one night and he said, "I almost got fired today, Dad. What did I do wrong?" And I said, "What happened?" And he said, "Well, the owner was showing me the kitchen, and it was my second day on the job. And I noticed that the cleaning products for the kitchen were too close to the produce that they were using to make the food. So I said to him, you can't, by health law, keep your produce next to the cleaning products like that." And the guy got a little bit perturbed and said, "Whose name is on your paycheck, employee?" And he said, "So instead of sharing useful information, I almost got fired." And I re-role-played that interaction with him, and I said, "Look, the more important issue was a process violation. It's his story. You work for him. You can't tell him in that context what he must do or should do. But if you were in the kitchen with him and noticed the same health code violation with the produce and the cleaning products, and you said to him something like, permission to share, sir. And he said, yeah, what do you got? And you said, well, with my understanding of the health code, we could get shut down, which you don't want and I don't want. If those things are that close to each other, would you like me to do something about that? That way he's pointing out the code and he's pointing out the problem, but he's not challenging the guy's power as an owner at all. And then the guy might well say, great, thank you, please adjust that. And if you can be in charge of health code applications in the kitchen, if you see anything else out of line, let me know and we'll make an adjustment." And again, he said, "Let me know and then we'll make an adjustment." That means don't start changing things in here without me. See, there's the issue of the content, code, food, cleaning products, etc. And then there's the issue of process. This is not a horizontal relationship in this kitchen. Might be outside, but not in here. In here, it's what I'm paying you to do is listen to me, the boss says. And that is equally an important thing to establish. So this vertical versus equal stuff is tricky. When I work with couples, I often ask them who's in charge, and over 90% of the couples will say we're equal partners, two-headed dragons, no one's in charge. Or if they have some other formulation about that, and they say, no, you know, the man is the head of the household, or however they were raised, or however they want to do it, that'll also work. I'm not pushing them toward one or the other so much as I have to know what the pattern is to know how they should be interacting effectively given that pattern. So up to them, you know, my personal choice is to be horizontal, be equal. But each couple can make their own decision about that. Now, we discussed earlier three kinds of argument that encompass most of the arguments people have. The first one being who's right fights, and we talked about subjectivity last week and how that can help you end who's right fights. The second one is you're not listening to me fight, or you don't understand. And those are not hard to fix mechanically either if you learn the concepts and skills. We're going to talk about that a little more when it comes to consideration. And the third fight, which is you're not the boss of me fights. And that's true. I want to be able to assert myself. I want to be able to negotiate as an equal. I think I can get all the respect I need if I'm assertive and not aggressive, and if I'm willing to understand my rights and to communicate with reasonable quality, I can learn to get what I need without crossing any lines toward being aggressive or being angry. Don't need it. So here's an example of how assertiveness could work. Suppose my spouse comes to me, you know, I love her, and she says, I want to buy a new sofa for the living room. And I say, well, we can't afford that right now, and I'm not talking about it. Well, that would push her buttons, and so she takes space for a second. She backs up. She grounds herself. She gets clear. She says, well, you're not willing to talk about it would be a violation of my right to an issue. We have to talk about it because I'm putting it on the agenda. I say, too bad, I'm not talking about it. A further violation. And she says, the next thing we're going to interact about is setting a time for the sofa discussion or having the sofa discussion. And until that happens, we're not doing anything else. And again, because I want her as a partner and because she's independent enough at any given moment to go on without me, and that doesn't mean divorce or separation. That's a serious thing in extreme cases. But it does mean she can walk away, not interact, and do just fine without me. So I will come around and eventually have that conversation about the sofa, because she has a right to that because she brought it up. And again, we're now in the process of exchanging worlds. So her assertion is, I want to do something to clean up the furniture situation in the living room, and I need respect for that out of this conversation. And if I say, well, we don't have a lot of money right now for buying a sofa, that's just another piece to be respected in the conversation and in the negotiation and in the resolution we come up with. We can do it, but her assertion is, until I get some respect for this issue, I don't want to disconnect or give it up. And remember, if we start pushing each other's buttons, start escalating, start being less grounded, then there's a good use for that pause button. Whenever someone sees an escalation, they go time or neutral corners, and we leave each other alone for enough time, and it varies from couple to couple or relationship to relationship, for both people to get grounded and then return. And in my grounding and in my clarifying and in my planning and in my calming down, I remember the rights, I remember the respect. If I come back and say, look, we've got to find a resolution to this couch item, the sofa item, that you can live with, that's something I'll remember to say while I'm stopping and grounding. Anyway, I've got to stop for now. Our half hour is up. I'm going to continue this discussion of assertion and consideration, especially focusing on consideration, the very next time we meet, which is next Monday at 7. And remember, dynskills.com, dynskills.com is where you can find a complete set of the podcast from these broadcasts, and we'll see you in a week.